This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, friends. Good morning, friends.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Santa Barbara, Sangha. Good morning, Mom. Good morning, Tova. Good morning, Mariko. Good morning, Kathy and Jackie and Judy and Susan. And Daryl, and Shulong, and Fiona, and Peter, and Chris, and Trout. It's really wonderful.
Hello.
Hi. It's wonderful to have you all together. I hope you were able to join us this morning to watch the vows ritual that we enacted and embodied together. But before we go into great detail in vows, I want to share with you a poem by Wang Ye. It's called Poem Sent to Brothers and Sisters from the Mountains. In the mountains are many companions of the way, sitting Zen, chanting, forming a natural community. But if you gazed from far off from city walls in this direction, all you would see is white clouds. This weekend, the Voices of Women in Zen vows met here at Jikoji to explore the women's experience in Zen practice. Kind of to talk shop, but mostly to honor our matriarchal ancestors whose names are often lost or forgotten. And also we met to embody a ritual that created for vows, with the mothers of vows, and in honor of those women ancestors. I want you to know that before we go into the detail of the ritual, which will be next, the most profound part, I think, of creating vows and enacting this ritual was the process. The actual relationships that arose and were enforced and joyous collaboration. And when I say joyous, I mean there were difficult moments and they were met joyfully. And it was, I think, eye-opening for even us to see that in the midst of some kind of things that we had to work out, we did it with such open hearts and with such trust that we would get to a yes. That we would find our way that was not Carolyn's opinions or Judy's opinion or Menzen's opinion or anybody else's opinion, but a collaboration that was better than anything else that we could have imagined. And that experience makes us think, well, the whole world could be like this, right? When you have that experience, when you feel it in your bones, you go, oh, well, we could all do that for each other all the time. So we naturally formed quite a delicious little community, these mothers, and now you are part of that community. By bearing witness to the ritual, you've become part of that fabric. And I will tell you that for those of us who enacted that ceremony this morning, we are full of awe, really, and gratitude for all the things that had to happen back when all those women were first practicing Buddhism, all those women who we don't even know about, all those people had to do their part for us to be sitting here right now. That's pretty remarkable. So speaking of gratitude, we are sitting in the belly of Zen practice at Jikoji in this beautiful Zendo. And I want to say thank you on behalf of all of the mothers and on behalf of you too, for what Jikoji has done to make a place for vows. From the very beginning, we were supported. I would say, in my case, prodded and pushed, which was support to go forward with this little idea that we had. And the guiding teachers and the people who live here and this community has been incredibly supportive. And we owe you deep gratitude. So, thank you. And none of us would be here without our founding teacher having made this temple, Kōbun Chino Atagawa Roshi. I encourage you to go out to his memorial site and say thank you to him. None of us would be here without him. So thank you, Kōbun. So we've had a very natural custom of speaking about the origin of vows and then the ritual of vows and then what we want for it as an offering to the world. So I'm going to speak very briefly about the idea. Then Judy will speak about the ritual, and Carolyn will speak about vows as an offering to the world and why we study women's lineage. So the little seedling of vows began years ago when I started noticing that when I listened to women give Dharma talks, there was something that resonated with me that I really couldn't identify, but there was something that was different for me as the receiver of their wisdom. And I really resisted thinking it had to do with gender. I want you to know, I fought that battle and I lost. There's something about the embodiment, whoever you are, there's something about we're in these bodies and this body is making this expression. And I realized that a lot of what I'd heard was a different embodiment. And I wanted to hear a bigger range of the expression of the Dharma. I wanted to hear from women. I want to say to my Dharma brothers and sisters, many of whom are my great teachers, that there is nothing missing in your teachings, nothing missing. There was just something else I could hear, like a bell ringing from far, far away, and I wanted to hear that bell. I mentioned this to my teacher, and he kind of pushed me out to do this. And I mentioned it to Angie Boisivan, who is another teacher in our lineage. And she kindly, gently said, yes. The whole world was saying yes to this little seed. And then I found these other women, some of whom are speaking today, some of whom enacted this ritual, some of whom are there. Some of the mothers of vows couldn't be here, but they're there. And that's what really happened. So I had this idea, but what you see comes from all of these women. And of course, not just these women, it comes from all of you too, in this incredible way in which we are here together today without knowing how we got here. I feel that way about vows. How do we get here? So our program this weekend included a couple of exercises, and I will tell you briefly what they were. The first is called the basket case. We have a basket. A case is another word for a koan, which is a question that you ask of yourself. And in asking it of yourself, you're really asking it of everything, everywhere, all at once. And so we put our questions about our practice into this basket, and we pulled them out and we talked about them. This was really interesting because the question could be, of course, approached at a unique level to each person who received this question. There isn't an answer. There's a multifaceted answer depending upon who's asking. And that's a big question, right? Who's asking? We also had an exercise that was an experiential connection. We were led in a movement exercise that began here with this body. And this body went somewhere, I don't know where. And we were all one body, moving and experiencing something. I don't know what it was, together. It was very together and very moving. And then last night we had what we call the matriarch encounter. Each of us brought a woman from any lineage. It could be someone in your own life. It could be your mother or your aunt or your sister or your friend, someone whom you identify as nurturing. Or it could be someone from the lineage of the Japanese, Chinese, Korean. It could be anyone. And Western Buddhist lineage. And it was extremely moving because you'd hear these stories that you often do not hear the stories about these women. And suddenly these women, whose maybe you heard their name, suddenly they were flesh and bones in the room with you. And you knew not only their story, but even if they're mythological, you knew their story. And you also knew that the woman in front of you who was speaking their story was somehow allowing that woman's practice to be present right now through her. And you knew how it had touched her. So it was very powerful. Even though that word is used a lot, it was powerful. And then today, as you know, we enacted this vows ritual. And I want to say thank you to Paula Arai, who's had to go now. Paula and Carolyn and I created this ritual that maybe we can put on the website for you to see on our website, Vows. Right now, it's just here. And it's an offering of illumination and fragrance of compassion and the blooming of a lotus flower in the mud of your own life and our lives too, as we then chant all the names of all the women, representative women. We chanted 8 from each lineage, to remind us that they're still practicing right now with us. And so I'm going to pass this computer over to my friend and sister and fellow mother, Judy, to talk about that ritual. Thank you all for being here.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Judy Ecudo Reyes, and I will be reading the words of Paula Arai. If you were here for the ritual, she was to my left. She was standing to my left. This is called Voices of Women in Zen Ritual. Through the ages, women have congregated around tables and altars to share their wisdom and empower themselves to respond to the vicissitudes of life with compassion. They needed no one's permission to do so. Many consciously understood, and others intuited that communally creating and engaging in rituals is a powerful way to embody values and commitments. In a long line of women, each woman now brings all the wisdom she has gathered in her bones to the ritual we created, Vows, Voices of Women in Zen. As the ritual honors and thanks all preceding women, the women who enact the ritual are empowered. The ritual is illuminated by the lustrous historical roots in their contributions traversed India, China, Korea, Japan, and into the West, empowering women as they transformed in each cultural milieu. The ritual fills the space in our hearts and community with female Buddhas and enlightened beings. Vows begins with offerings of light, scent, and flowers, each activating vital qualities. Light illuminates the space with wisdom. Incense releases the fragrance of compassion. Lotus blossoms herald the womb of enlightenment. Invoking Prajna Paramita, mother of all Buddhas, puts everyone involved with the ritual into the presence of the source of enlightened being, inviting each person to be ever aware and in touch with the Buddha nature that animates all life. By proclaiming out loud in each other's presence, we activate our wise and compassionate nature. In paying homage to our ancestors, we vivify our gratitude to the countless women before us, naming 8 women representatives from India, China, Korea, Japan, and US. Each woman manifests their agency through their offerings. And having invoked all Buddhist women across time, the jewel net of our interdependent being is highlighted. To recognize that we are all together in this precious womb, each a precious pearl of luminous beauty, we pass the pearl one to another as we see each other deeply with the heart. We are each unique with specific qualities and characteristics, and this is our perfection, like the natural pearl we offer around the circle before offering it on the altar table. In doing so, we affirm Dogen's teaching, all the universe is one bright pearl. The arc of the ritual has moved from becoming present with each of our offerings, recognizing that we are in a long stream of women from around the world, and seeing the preciousness of our wombs, we now gather in our wisdom and compassion in full blossom, connecting our bodies in the circle of wisdom and compassion in our midst, demonstrating that we are an integral part of the interdependent flow of phenomenal reality. Performing and witnessing this ritual infuses us with a determination and strength as we are reminded, renewed, and fortified that we are a circle of interdependence, committed to being vectors of wisdom and compassion in the world.
Good morning, good friends. And good morning, friends from the Floating Zendo and Kathy, and good morning, Kwasi, who's somewhere, I don't know where, and good morning, Judy Pruzinski, and good morning to all the Santa Barbara Sangha, which most of whom Pamela has already mentioned, and to all those whom I don't know or who have their icons, everyone is welcome. So my dear friends and Dharma sisters up here at this moment have given quite a bit of background. And I just wanted to say some words about why we study these Buddhist ancestors and why, even more importantly, why we bring them to everyone in this embodied sense. Which is a ritual, as Paula's words explain so beautifully. We do this because we don't want anyone to be excluded. That's not the understanding, really, anyone who practices deeply. All of our teachers are male teachers, our female teachers. Whatever body they're in, a non-gendered body, however the body shows up, it's an embodied being. And we all have that true nature, Buddha nature. And this is why we want to share this with everyone. and exclude no one. And of course, historically, as has been referenced briefly, women have been forgotten or excluded. Sometimes this was very deliberate because of the cultural conditions, causes, and conditions at a particular time and place in history. And that's gone through since the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, many different flows. And as Paula, who is a renowned scholar, now the chair of the Institute for Buddhist Studies in Berkeley, now the chair of their Women in Buddhism group. So she has really gotten into how many women have been overlooked and had this feeling that we all have up here, and those who cannot be here, we call ourselves the mothers, that these people also need to be referenced just as we chant just as we chant the Heart Sutra and thank all of our ancestors, which are mostly men in Soto Zen. We have we do thank Mahapajapati, the stepmother of Buddha, who was the first Buddhist nun and who raised Siddhartha, who became Buddha, the awakened one, when his mother died early after childbirth, or perhaps in childbirth. She raised him, and then he left to also hear something inside him that he heard. Said, I know that there's more to this life than this rather luxurious palace life he was leading. He was the first son of a Sakya warrior clan. So he wasn't a real like king or prince, but he led a pretty sheltered life, and he knew that there was something more. And I think we all know that, and that's why we're here. And so we just want to be sure that everyone is included. And in our cultural time, even still, it's not always that women are included here in the West in our time. In many ways, this manifests. But we want to remind everybody that basically we're all the same in our deepest nature. And even in our embodiment, there's very little DNA difference between men and women. They're important differences, but there's very little. And so that's one reason why we want to bring this, so that we can all, as Pamela mentioned, share the experience with everyone. Anyone can have this experience. A ritual really is very deeply empowering and embodied. That is what our Zen practices as well. It's very simple. We just sit down. We did a lot of bowing in the ritual, and bowing and receiving the robe. That's from Dogen, the founding teacher of receiving the marrow, receiving the real essence of what one's true nature is. Sometimes there are many Buddhist stories, and especially in Zen, where people just bowed down and got that, oh, okay, I do have that nature to be compassionate, to meet life circumstances with equanimity, with caring for others. So we wanted to share that sense that we all have very strongly, and increased by the power of the ritual, that this is a good thing to share. So I think really that's the main things to say. We've talked a lot now, and we do welcome questions, and we really like to hear from you. Any questions you might have about the ritual, or any comments you might have, anything. We have a little time before lunch, And we want to be ample and inviting you to speak. So, and there's Randy. And Trout.
He has a comment. I think our speaker's live, so feel free.
I'm sorry, I didn't get who was.
That was Santa Barbara. We were just seeing if anyone in our group had a question. So,
oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing the ritual with us this morning. It was beautiful and felt honored to be a part of it, if virtually. Really, really exciting and wonderful to watch.
Thank you.
I was wondering which ritual seems to me what I've learned and exposed to is that its basic definition is it's inexplicable. That's why it's a ritual visualized.
It's thank you, Todd. It is inexplicable, and it's because you embody ritual, you feel it, the inexplicability and the beauty. You really know what's being chanted or done as you move through it. It goes to like sitting practice, goes deep into you just sitting. The ritual is another form of that. But without the words, like sitting, not that words don't go through your head, of course, in sitting sometimes, but or maybe often. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you for this question, because you keep talking about ritual and we don't really say what it is. I think for vows, ritual is giving form, an embodied form to give meaning. It's the way we express meaning. And maybe the meaning is mysterious, because how could we ever find the single thread that pulls all the way back to the beginning that brought us to this moment where we're enacting this ritual? But yet, ritual creates meaning. And in everyone's lives, we all have rituals, right? I like my morning cup of coffee. It is a ritual. And it has some meaning to me that is beyond that coffee and the cup and me. It's me and the coffee and the cup and everything that ever happened. But it's contained in that cup. It's the whole world in the moment in which I'm having that cup. So I think that a way of looking at ritual, just one of many faceted ways, is to see it as a way of creating meaning, calling attention, maybe saying, look, this has always been here. There it is. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Can you hear it?
Rituals also symbolized in illumination by lighting the candle, by offering scent and offering compassion. The lotus flower, which comes from the mud. It comes from muckiness, but out of it comes beauty. So there's a lot of symbolism with the ritual.
Again.
Thanks so much to everyone who is here. Everyone's part of the happening for today. A couple of things come to mind that I'd like to share. One is this idea that the process you went through in creating a ritual may have been about creating meaning. And in my experience today, the meaning was clear when I saw after the ritual how there were tears and people were together. That was, and that didn't. The other thing that really struck me was what was mentioned, this idea of the process of working together until a yes arises. That struck me very, very personally. I'm sometimes struggling to find what is my yes. It's not too hard to find things to help with. Not too hard to have a very real but somewhat superficial yes. I'm still searching for a deeper yes at times. It's a little frustrating. But that the importance of there being a process and a patience to wait for the arising of a yes. Thanks for that reminder. I've been carrying a thought and sharing it with folks for a while now. This thought about pausing and waiting for a creative response to arise. But I realized in that I was carrying this assumption of almost freezing and waiting for a yes to arise rather than putting one foot in front of the other and dancing with the people around me and having the faith, yes will arise. So thanks for that reminder.
So there's someone online?
I just want to say, Hogan, that it's not your yes. That's why.
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of the beauty. That it's whose yes I don't know, but it's not mine alone and not yours alone, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh, Jarrell had
some. Jarrell, was there someone online too? No? Jarrell.
Well, so somewhat related to that. I have sort of assumed that the development of this ritual is something that will be shared all about as it is. And then I was wondering about whether that's the primary direction, or is it possible that the direction will be in somehow encouraging various gatherings of students and practice to work, keep ritual working out the ritual, or some kind of a together activity through which they would become more deeply connected. So that instead of just one ritual, there would arise various ways of interrelating, working in the future.
I think we could all speak to that because we've all spoken to each other so much about that. Thank you so much for that question. It's very important to share with all of our friends here today. That in brief, I'll just say yes, we do though to the there. We are envisioning this as going to women in Zen wherever they are and whatever kind of Zen practice they do. And we have created a template, but we do not feel that this is in stone. It's an offering, and different groups do have different needs, and they have different sangha members and etc. So it's the The one bright pearl metaphor and the actual pearl we pass around is a really powerful reminder of that for me. Thank you.
I'm very happy with the answer.
Judy? No, we don't.
Doug has a question.
Doug, and then Judy's Przinsky online. Doug.
Yes, thank you for this powerful ceremony. One of the most moving and transformative parts is, as you talked about, is the transfer and receiving the pearl. That's really special.
Thank you, Doug. Judy.
I love when ritual is called together. For example, I found out about today, just a few days ago, when I was visiting at Jikoji. And the stream that pulls me in, as does everyone in their own unique way. And that, as you all sort of spoke of, you know, that coming together and what is created, no one could see before. And as we all sit here, there's little seeds that have been planted. And we have no idea how those will blossom, but they have been planted and something will come of them. So taking the time and the consciousness to put ourselves to ritual together is very precious. Thank you.
Thank you. Emily.
I wanted to just mention that there's a couple of women mothers here with us this weekend, and they don't have English as their first language. It was a little bit challenging, maybe, for them at times to comprehend everything, or maybe just and so I feel like the ritual for that, and there was no more difficulty. Transcended the language barriers, transcended the lack of translation in the words or some of the languages we're speaking, and that all that was dissolved, all that tension was dissolved in the ritual.
Thank you. And that reminds me to thank you, Emily, and to thank Shulong for thank you, Shulong, for helping us with the Korean pronunciations, because none of us really knew. So we thank you, and we, as they say in Buddhism, and we apologize for any mistakes and and ask for your forbearance. Randy.
Yeah, can you hear?
Yes, we can.
Okay. This might be off topic, but we're discussing ritual and women. And I just went to women in life, and I just, what came up for me was my wife and her relationship with our children, and the ritual of childbirth. Or there's something, I'm not trying to separate men and women teachers, but there's something about women and that capacity of childbirth or giving childbirth. And there's a certain depth that just seems to resonate out of that. And that's from my own experience of seeing, really from my own family situation, my wife and my children. And I'm very close to my daughters, but she, there's something else with her that penetrates to another level. And I don't know if this is really off topic, but there's something about, I think, the capacity of women to see in a pretty deep way something. And I don't, I'll just stop there, but I don't know what to say, but that's what came up for me on all the talk and stuff like that. Was it just it came home to my own situation. Whoa, you know, that's something I've been seeing, because my second daughter just left for Scotland and she's going to live there. So, it was you know, whole thing of mother, child, father, and change, and and relationship, I guess. So that's it.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you. I don't feel it was off topic. I feel like you brought in an important piece of family in a certain sense. When we do have family in your experience, for example, we can perhaps see that more easily, but we can also see that even if we don't give birth, or even if we're not embodied as women. And the family piece, that you see that, and we heard what you felt and what you saw. And so, so thank you for bringing that in. It's not about a separation. It's about seeing and feeling the wider, and whether it's your Dharma sisters or brothers or your own small family or large family. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was having a lot of different thoughts in my head, and I didn't know where to start. So here's a question which might simplify all the things that are going on regarding women in Zen. And so if you were to pick the most important thing that women in Zen, the group, will serve an existing woman or a new woman, which Zen itself wasn't serving, what would that be? And then, what is the most important thing that women in Zen would serve a man that Zen wasn't serving?
Mm-hmm.
And I ask men because ultimately our intention is to serve all sentient beings. And so if you could just pinpoint these two points, then I think a lot of that is going on to resolve.
Anyone?
I'll take a second one.
So it's a really important question. I hope you could hear. He asked, what is it that vows can offer, should offer to men, and that they haven't, that they're not already getting through the practice that is available to all people in Zen. And this is important because, we're not just women, I guess is the way I want to describe this. We're humans, right? Randy's not that different than I am. None of my Sangha brothers, my real brothers, my friends is really that different in the human experience. We're calling attention to the women's embodiment and practice of Zen because it's not talked about all the time. And women who have been practicing since the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, we don't really tell their stories so much, do we? For a variety of reasons to which Carolyn has referred, they kind of got disappeared. So if you knew as a human being that, forget about your gender for just a minute, if you can do that, just put it away for a minute. Sorry, that sounds bad, put it away. But in any event, if you can just for a second set it aside and think about your human experience, and someone comes up and says, you know, there's this whole other kind of human experience that maybe you're not getting a huge, wide smorgasbord kind of taste for, here it is. It's always been here. Would you like a bite? So I think that's what we want, Karen, is to give you a bite of the woman who is living in you and the woman that's living in everybody. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, that is wonderful.
Not a real bite. Don't go around biting us.
I would say another way to look at it is there are many facets to a diamond, which make up a diamond. And this is one facet of that diamond. And so it's nice to turn it around so you can see all the different parts that make it up. Unfortunately, in this diamond that's being represented, the women part is in the back, or maybe underneath on the ring part that is never seen, but still makes it up. I mean, it's still there, still a part of the entire diamond. We're illuminating it now. We're bringing it to light for you and basically all the world to shine that light.
And that was something that I was thinking about. I was thinking that each man has a feminine side, which psychologists have called the animal, and the animus, which is like the subtle spiritual side of non-material, non-joining side. And I think it is quite, will be very beneficial for men to be in touch with them and as part of practice. And so that is a wonderful point, I think, which was the second part of my question. And could you answer the first part of that, which was for women, what would be the most important?
Thank you.
In one sense, we are practice. It's not even about Zen. We are in this tradition, though. This is the form that has called us, and we are here embodying that form as best we can, and we just want to give another expression to that embodiment. But it's really not even about Zen. It's just okay. It's Zen because we're here, but it's seeing the whole thing as the beautiful metaphors of the jewel. You know, it's seeing the whole jewel.
I just realized there's that vida la différence, right? See the other side of that. So it's great that we're different on one hand. I love it.
We need it.
This bridge of mind.
Yeah. Hi, yes, a thought coming on top of that too. First of all, thank you for embodying all these the lineage of wisdom. Of knowledge, and so I could really feel all of them being here. by you calling on them. And the thought that I'm having is, what I'm wondering about is if through history and, you know, through the way Kutch's work, women have been trained or better at embodying wisdom and handing on their wisdom through embodiments. And men have often been the voice, the heard voice of the wisdom. And I'm wondering if the work of vows, as it says, the voices of women in Zen, is that work that really sharing that wisdom in voices, sharing the voices of these women that share wisdom, just like the men in Zen, right? So I don't see any difference there. I think that was, you know, maybe part of the question of it, but the mission is to give voice to what is embodied, what we share when we meet with each other without words, but making vow, sharing what can be out there.
Beautiful.
Lori, you pointed something out that Judy just pointed out. So I'm going to. So what she talked about is that, I don't know, could you hear her question? Anybody? No. Okay. So she just mentioned that perhaps over time, causes and conditions going back forever into the future too, let's say, that men's voices have been heard and women's voices have not been heard, but that women have conveyed or transmitted wisdom differently. And that vows is an expression and an embodiment and an effort to use actually what were called our voices of women in Zen to transmit wisdom, right? So I wanted to show you, I hope you can see, this is the logo for vows. Do you see it? I'm holding it still as I can. Okay, and I want to tell you that this Giroux, in his incredibly masterful, subtle way, which means he had to repeat it three times to me, brought these ideographs and pointed them out. And the ideograph Nyo is translated as thus, as it seems, just as, thusness, okay? So it is the Nyo of Nyurai, thus come, expressing the essential, unspeakable experience of reality. So the thing that's really interesting about it is that it is formed, that ideograph is formed from a character that is woman, and a character that is mouth. So I hope that's messing with your mind the way it messed with my mind. So what a woman says out of her mouth, her voice, is thus.
Thusness.
So does that help? We are definitely trying to express that. This, thus.
Thank you, Jerome.
I hope you don't regret teaching me that. I've kind of hit everybody over the head with it for a while.
There's a question in the chat from Hugh Darrell. Hi, in the book Zen Ritual, there's an order of nuns that practice many of the same rituals as men, but they have been adapted for women with an explanation of its purpose, but not how it is performed. Can you tell us what you do?
Well, hi, Daryl. I think I'm not sure if I can answer that question, but I will tell you that our ritual that we created and enacted is an kind of its own adaptation of the, what's the first word? Anangashiki.
Anangashiki.
Anangashiki, which is a ritual enactment that happens in Japan that is includes men, but it is done by women. And it is kind of a ritual to thank Ananda for convincing the Buddha to let women become monastics. And so what we've done is something related to that ritual in offering light and fragrance and flowers. So I'm not sure I could possibly speak to what's happening in Japan. I'm yet to go. So I'll report back some point, okay? Maybe, hopefully. Shulong.
Thank you. I'm glad I was able to witness part of the ritual this morning. And I have to say the pronunciation was actually with the help of my Korean friends, two female Korean friends who are amazingly has their own way to help me pronounce them. So I'm here to thank them as well. And I just thought that the symbol of the vow is brilliant because, as you said, is definitely the Tathagata, the first part of the Tathagata, thus go, thus come, which is the essence of Buddha's teaching. The other part I wanted to share is my personal experiences as a woman going to the sesshin, because I really realize a lot of time, every time I prepare myself to go to the sesshin, is my way of renunciate all my baggages that I carry as me to enter the openness of the space in Jikoji. And I found that very profound and hard, that I have to have a lot of battles going on. And I don't know if this really being very specific to women, especially with the cultural roles and the you know, the stereotype that we're trying to fit in the society. But for me personally, there's always a battle that I have renunciate myself to sit for a couple of days without worrying any of my families, of my work, of who I was to be recognized as, but a new identity, or not new, but going back to the original identity I am. So I really found that very profound, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Shulong, for sharing that. You're not alone. Mm-hmm. You're not alone in that. You know, you can like flip through the like a comic book of all yourselves, right? Just keep going. Here they come. Here comes another one. And eventually you'll be done, maybe, except for the one that's here right now. And then she's gone. So thank you for your practice. Okay, any other questions? Because it's almost lunchtime. I just saw the Tenzo go, which means there's going to be a bell soon. Last chance. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.